we're seeing now, the reason why they're cutting interest rates is not because of a strong economy. It's like insurance policy. You gotta be joking me. Like, the only reason why they've cut interest rates before is because the economy has been very weak, and it's been faltering, and that's what they've done in.
Hey everyone, this is Tim Pichuk, the Liberty Advisor. So today we've got a great video with myself and John Snyson coming up. But right after we made this video, we saw end up having a tweet from Donald Trump. So I just want to read that right now. And here we have Donald Trump saying, "What the market wanted to hear from Jay Powell and the Federal Reserve was that this was the beginning of a lengthy and aggressive rate cutting cycle, which would keep pace with China." And it's funny because, you know, just like about 2 weeks before that, he was saying, you know, how the dollar would always be the strongest. And then I think a week before that, he said how we had to cut, you know, one for one with China. So it's funny how you want to have your cake and eat it too. But we need to keep pace with China, the European Union, and other countries around the world. As usual, Powell let us down, but at least he is ending quantitative tightening, which shouldn't have started in the first place. No inflation. We are winning anyway, but I am certainly not getting much help from the Federal Reserve. Well, that is quite the opening salvo, and I just wanted to sneak this in here as an addendum because this came out right after we got done filming the video. But anyways, what we have coming up for you right now is we did have a live, discussion while the press conference was going on. That can be found at thelibertyadvisor.com. If you guys go there, click on the upper right-hand corner where it says show. And then from there, you see all the different places where you can find my media. So you've got live Twitch. So the live stream was shown on DLive, Twitch, my Facebook page, the Tim Pichuk. So if you're following me there on Facebook or my fan page, got that as well. Then also, if you go here, you see different links for Brave Browser Presearch. I got my free ebook on there as well. So lots of goodies. So make sure that you guys subscribe to us because, you know, they could take down Wham tomorrow, in which case, you know, we need to make sure that we've got other auxiliary channels. Make sure you guys also check out the Reshot Structure video that Josh just shot. This is a 3-hour documentary that he's been working on for 5 months straight. Make sure you guys check that out. But now, without further ado, we're going to get to John Snyson and myself breaking down everything that happened during today's rate.
We're seeing now the reason why they're cutting interest rates is not because of a strong economy. It's like insurance policy. You gotta be joking me. Like, the only reason why they've cut interest rates before is because the economy has been very weak, and it's been faltering, and that's what they've done in of course in 2018 and no, in 2007 to 8 that they cut. Let me just pull up something there, Tim, and I do actually
have the Wikipedia page of the history of all the rate cuts pulled up. So if you want me, I can take the lead on this and kind of go over the history of what happened and sort of, you know, where we were then and kind of relate to where we are today. But I know that you were trying to pull something up, so I can stall for you for a little bit.
Yeah, just 1 second.
Well, what you had is August 7th, 2007 was really kind of the opening salvo. So you had back then the Fed funds rate was at 5.25% and the discount window was at 6.25, and everything was going good until 10 days later. They decided, okay, you know, the first thing we need to do is, instead of having a 1% spread or 100 basis point spread, we're going to limit it to a 50 basis point spread. So, which basically means that now the banks can borrow money overnight for 0.5% cheaper than they would. And that was all well and dandy until 1 month later, they then had to cut the Fed funds rate from 5.25 down to 4.75. And then a month later, they cut it another 25 basis points. A month and a half later, another 25 basis points. Then a month after that, they cut it down to 3.5%. Then,
total five percent.
Yeah, yes, and this, but what we're looking at, I've got it pulled up on the screen. Once it starts going quick. So, you know, from the time we were at 5.25 to 3, it was only the matter of about 4 or 5 months. And then, you know, then it starts getting into March, and then you've got Bear Stearns, and so then everything's going great on March 16th, but then March 18th, 2 days later, they have an emergency meeting, and now they've got to cut rates by 75 basis points. Then a month later, they cut it by another 25 basis points, and then they try holding things. And unfortunately, this is right as I'm graduating. So right as I'm trying to find a finance job on Wall Street or some sort of stock analyst job, is right as all this crap is blowing up. And then they all papered it over until October 8th, when they had to have a emergency meeting, because this is post Lehman Brothers now, which happened September 15th,
2008. And then they dropped it from 2 down to 1.5. And then 20 days later, they dropped it from 1.5 down to 1. And then a month and a half later, they dropped it down to 0, where it then remained at 0 for 7 years. And the only reason it even they even raised it 7 years later is because they kept BSing where everything would be in the future, meaning that initially they said, okay, and maybe you can help me out with this, but I remember that Bernanke initially said, okay, when unemployment rate is below 6, we'll start raising rates. Then it turned from 6 to 5.5 to 5 to 4.5 to 4, and they kept finding an excuse not to raise rates. And then they kept, also pertaining this over to the stock market as well. You know, we're hitting all-time highs in the market. You know, how can we not raise rates under that environment? So since it had been built in, they kicked the can down the road so many times, they had to at least get one of these off. And it was December 16th, 2015. So, I mean, basically call it 2016 is when they raised rates only once, just because they had lied for so long. That they would have lost all credibility. I mean, they already lost credibility with me, you, probably anybody watching or listening, and certainly the World Alternative Media viewers. And then what happened is a year later, then they raised the rates 8 times because Donald Trump got elected. So from the time that he was actually presidential elect to being president, I think they've raised it 8 times. But that was only because the optimism of not having Hillary in there, or as I like to call her, Hitlery, in there was so great that people just got, you had all these Republicans who had their money on the sidelines for like 8 or 9 years, and all of a sudden they thought it was a new day for America. And as a money advisor, financial planner, I saw this firsthand, where I saw people who came to me who had money on the sidelines for 8 years, and all of a sudden now when the Dow was at 20,000, then that's when they want to start pumping money in, which, you know, has actually worked out for them right now. But, you know, that's only because everything, all this growth is predicated on keeping interest rates basically near zero or at zero. We're on our way to zero. You had mentioned we need to cut rates by 500 basis points or 5% is what is traditionally done. But if you take a look at what the real interest rate is versus real inflation rate versus what these bonds are paying, I mean, you're probably losing 2.5-3%.
Yeah, you're in the negative. You're basically negative interest rates right there. So, but what's interesting is I have a chart. If you go to SlideShare and you look at my global cashless system presentation that I did, I have all the charts up there for my PowerPoint, and I have a chart there that's very interesting, which shows the historical interest rates only since 1955, but it's actually the daily interest rate that I pulled down from the Federal Reserve. And you could also go to Infogram under John Snyson, search that up, and then you can find that same chart under my Infogram account, which is interactive, so you could actually go through it. But this chart, I actually have written down numbers and everything on. And what I found is that, interestingly enough, throughout the crises, we see different types of drops.
Now, would that be infogram.com/John Snyson, or how would we find that?
Just put Infogram and then John Snyson, and you should find it on Google. But if you, I'm just gonna actually go through the same chart, but I actually put on numbers here, which is on my SlideShare. .net if you search out John Snyson and then SlideShare, and you'll find this presentation over the interest rates. So what you'll see is this was back in the 70s, and if you can remind me about when exactly these big crashes were, I believe, of course, we went off the gold standard, and when that happened, we dropped interest rates.
That was August of 1971.
Yeah, and around that, little bit after that time, you saw interest rates drop 7.75% to stimulate the economy. Now, next time they went up, they went almost above a little bit above 14%, and now we're about in the 70s, like mid 70s, and then they had to drop it 11.8% to stimulate the economy. Then now we're further into the 80s, you know, the 80s crisis where gold and silver really took off, and they tried to, they really panicked. So they were up at about 22%. And for people that don't remember that, like it's mostly our parents that actually lived through that and saw the big interest rates that they had to pay on their mortgages or on loans and everything. It was about the Fed interest rate was about 22%. And they dropped it down in the 80s, all the way down 14% drop, close to about 8% at the bottom of it. And then the next drop was, of course, like right before 87, which was a big crash as well. Black Monday, remember that? That was a 6% drop throughout.
Sounds pretty racist.
Yeah, 6% drop. And then the next one was in the early 90s, which they dropped interest rates again from a little bit above 10 down to about 2%, close to a little over 2.5%. And that was 6% drop. And then the next time in the mid 2000s, they dropped it down from about 6% down to close to 1 point something. And that was a 7.5% drop. And then a 5.2% drop, of course, the last one that they had in 2008. So what you can see here is that they literally is the Fed trying to manipulate the economy and stimulate the economy. The problem is when they raise the interest rate, they collapse the debt economy. And then all the people that were, you know, over engulfed on debt, they go bankrupt because they can't pay their mortgage anymore. But the problem is we're getting lower and lower ever since. If you look at the chart, ever since, you know, the mid-80s, early 80s, we've gone constantly lower. And if you take a look at, like, this is how insane it is, it gets more and more manipulated. As you can see that in the 2000s, you know, you saw a drop that kept a little bit longer. But the, if you look at the last part.
Can I just cut in right here? Yeah. So I'm seeing on the screen right now, so the Dow is down a little over 300 points now. And it says that stocks tumble as Powell says, this cut isn't the start of a lengthy cycle. So the market, so that is a very, you know, hawkish, I guess, statement for what the market was hoping to hear. So maybe we can kind of, and I did pull up that chart on the Fred, Federal Reserve Economic Database, Fed Funds Rate charts. So I did have that up while we were going, but let's take a look what Jerome Powell is saying. Yeah. I got to delete it or mute it here. Here we go.
Rob from MarketWatch. I was wondering, we weren't in the room, but I think it's a fair assumption to know that the two dissenters probably spoke about financial stability concerns. So I was wondering if you could talk about what was your response to them when those concerns were raised. I've collected a couple of things from the IMF and the Bank of International Settlements, said that it's just when you have low rates, you just get more debt in the economy, and that this is also
really what a smart guy. This guy knows what he's talking about.
Let me say, I'll just speak for myself, but I understand those concerns very well. I do. I've studied them. I've spoken about them, and I take them very seriously. But as I look at today's situation, I don't see them as a reason not to take this action today. I just don't think that would be my point. And one of the reasons why I think that is, if you look, we have a financial stability framework now for the first time before the crisis. We didn't have this, but now we have it, and we publish it, and we look at really four big things, so that we know we can, you know, the public can hold us accountable and compare us.
You look at the stock market
meeting to meeting, and Trump's Twitter feed, you know, and see whether we got this right. So this is transparent now. But the four things we look at are valuation pressures, and we do see notable valuation pressures in some markets, but. You know, honestly, not at a highly troubling level. In terms of household borrowing, household and business borrowing, leverage in the financial system is low and funding risk is low. So overall, staff's view has been, and my view has been, that if you look overall, financial stability vulnerabilities are moderate. The place that gets all the attention right now, a lot of attention, is business borrowing. And we look very
collateralized loan obligations. Talk about that.
Moved off the balance sheets of the banks and into market-based vehicles, which tend to be stably funded. But nonetheless, it's clear that a highly leveraged business sector could act as an amplifier to a downturn. So we're watching that very carefully. But I think if you look overall at the U.S. Financial system, what you see is a high level of resilience, much higher than it was before the crisis. And that's something to take comfort from. And I think all of that gives us the ability to use monetary policy for its purposes, and rely on supervisory and regulatory tools to, you know, to keep the financial system resilient.
All right. Well, let's see. Let's see what else.
So you're not doing something today for to help today, and then it's going to cause problems down the road. You're not worried about that kind of dynamic.
Very few things that I don't worry about at all. So of course, we monitor. We have every quarter, we have an extensive briefing on financial stability, and we had that yesterday. So we look at this on an ongoing basis. We have a great team. We liaise with central banks around the world. You know, one of my colleagues is the head of the Financial Stability Board globally. So we're very
FSB.
And we worry. We're always looking at we're looking for that thing that we may have missed a lot of the time. But the things we haven't missed, I think they paint a mixed picture, but not one that should prevent us from taking monetary policy actions that we think are appropriate to support the economy.
Marty, how are you doing?
Let's see where we're going with this question.
Marty Kretzinger, AP. You've talked in this press conference about being data dependent going forward and that this is not the start of a series of rate cuts. But the financial markets seem to think that this is the start of a series of rate cuts, and they're predicting 3-4 cuts this year. Is this your effort to try to damp down that thinking?
No, let me be clear. What I said was it's not the beginning of a long series of rate cuts. I didn't say it's just one. Like that,
it's not long.
When you think
because
about rate
we don't
cutting
have a long
cycles,
ways
they go
to
on
to zero.
For
that's
a long time.
Yeah,
it'll be a little bit faster and long, buddy.
Real economic weakness, and you thought that the federal funds rate needed to be cut a lot. That's not what we're seeing. What we're seeing is that it's appropriate to adjust policy to a somewhat more accommodative stance over time, and that's how we're looking at it. And what I said was it's not a long cutting cycle. In other words, referring to what we do when there's a recession or a very severe downturn. That's really what I was ruling out.
I think mainly what he wants to say.
Point.
I think mainly what he wants to say is like, listen, we can't go ahead and blow our wad initially because the election is still a little ways away, and so we need to save some ammo in our tank over here to make sure we have that ammo ready for the 2020 election. Because what happens is there's about an 86% chance of the incumbent party winning if the stock market is up the 2 months prior to the election. And so it's what have you done for me lately? So it doesn't matter if the market goes up, you know, quite a bit now, which actually means it is down now, but it doesn't really matter if it's up now, but then right before the election, everything tanks. Because, you know, it's all, you know, what have you done for me lately? So we do, and he's saying over here, like, oh yeah, well, we don't, you know, anticipate, you know, we think everything is great now. We'll go back to that chart that I had pulled up earlier, and I've got it pulled up right now, where there's plenty of times where, you know, things are going great. I mean, things are going great on, you know, August 17th, and then, you know, 1 month later, they had to start cutting rates or, you know, or go to right around Lehman Brothers. So March of 2000, and what was that? March of 08, trying to find it here. Yeah, so on March 16th, everything was going great. And then by March 18th, 2 days later, that all of a sudden, then they had to cut rates 75 basis points. And then by about 40 days in total, you had rates go from 3% down to 2%, but everything was fine, you know, 40 days before that. And so all this stuff has to be kept in mind that, you know, this is all, you know, very, very short term in nature. Things change on a dime. And the whole reason this stuff is even going on is because the Federal Reserve, all this. So what happened when Trump got elected is that everyone got super optimistic, all the Republicans whose money was on the sidelines. And now that optimism basically gave the Fed no excuses not to cut rates anymore. And so by Trump going out there talking about how great things are going, you know, he was really kind of creating a catalyst to what would ultimately be his own problem and sort of like the, you know, undoing over here, because now the Fed lost that excuse to not cut rates. And when they lost that excuse to not cut rates, then all of a sudden, you know, all bets were off and the stock market started going down and they had to go figure out, you know, what they were going to do. And that's why I had a presentation called The Trump Effect and Why Good News is Bad News, is because all the good news would lead to the Fed not having the excuse to not cut rates anymore, which would lead to the bad news. But under Obama, there was so much bad news that it led to the Fed having that excuse to not cut rates, which was good news. And so as things are deteriorating, there's actually less of a chance of the Fed raising rates. I mean, now there's like no chance of the Fed raising rates, which ultimately is good news for the market. And what's also crazy is right now we're basically in the midst of what could very well be an actual earnings recession. I'm trying to find where I had this pulled up, but we're actually on the verge right now where as of Wednesday, yesterday, 298 out of the 505 S&P 500 companies, which I don't know why there's 505 S&P 500 companies. Some at the bottom end might, you know, trade in and out, but oh well. 59% have reported their results. And as of right now, the decline was 1.86 to the negative, the average earnings. And then if you also take a look at what it was first quarter, it was a decline of 0.3%. And so what's crazy is this gigantic run-up is coming off the backs of the market. You know, so it's like, okay, you know, basically shit was going off a cliff from October to December. And then you'd probably think, okay, well, probably the companies are earning a lot more money. Well, actually, there's earning decreases, but yet the stock market has soared because now there's a greater chance of the Fed cutting rates. And actually, they just did cut rates. And so it's just like this really crazy sort of, you know, dichotomy that we're in right now. And, you know, just at what point does bad news mean bad news again? And so sorry to cut you off. I know you were talking about the interest rates and where things have been going in the past and how we're at, you know, like 15 to 17% in the 80s. And now, you know, we're at a point where these rates have to stay low forever because it's all about the next election. It's all about kicking the can down the road. And it's all about getting out of Dodge so that way he can go write a book called, you know, The Courage to Act, you know, part two. And I'll do my best to move that from to the fiction section, because obviously with, you know, Ben Bernanke, you know, should not be doing any victory laps, because the Fed all along said that they were going to be cutting rates. And guess what? They couldn't cut rates. They couldn't do it. In 2012, the Fed dot plots, which is the you know what the dot plots are, John, but it's the Federal Reserve governor's estimate and where rates will be both current year, next year, the following years, 3 years from now, and then longer term. They said the longer term rate in 2012, i.e. 4 years ago, 2015, would have been at 4.25. I mean, so right now, what, did today's move bring it down to 2.25? But, you know, anyways, they were completely off. The only reason they were able to get these rates, the one rate hike in 2015, well, basically 2016, was because they lied so much. And then the only reason they were able to sneak these other ones in is because the tax cuts led to led to companies repatriating their money, which then led to them buying back their own shares, which then led to higher earnings per share, which actually now it's not even higher earnings per share. And so it's all been gamed. It's all been rigged. And it's just, you know, where do we go from here?
Well, let's take a look at, like, not just the United States, because actually the United States is the strongest one right now in the economy because everybody's flooded into the U.S. for safety. Because everywhere else in the world, there's a lot of monetary turmoil. In Europe, for example, just the recent numbers that I'm looking at a whole bunch. Like, I always watch the current daily numbers and indicators that come out, and most of them are pointing down. For example, the consumer confidence in Japan has been going down the whole year. And of course, it's at not a record low, but it's getting quite lower. We got the retail sales in Germany is down again year over year. You're looking at the national what housing prices in the UK is down. Inflation is stalling in France. In Spain, you're also seeing inflation slowing down. You're seeing, let's go further down the way here and take another look at some other numbers here. We got the inflation rate in the euro area, all of the euro area is down further, year over year. It's down from 1.3 to 1.1. You're looking at the core inflation is down the same. You're looking at the inflation rate year over year, and in Italy is also down. So what this is telling us is in Mexico, the GDP growth is now negative year over year in second quarter. And what you're seeing is a downtrend in the global economy where most of the indicators of consumer, like how confident they are, you're seeing the inflation going down, even debt is decreasing in a lot of places. And what's that telling us is that when debt is decreasing, that's the horror of a central banker when they see deflation in the economy, because they won't need inflation to keep their Keynesian fractional reserve monetary Ponzi scheme going. And they need constantly more debt into the system. So this is getting really scary, especially in the European Union. It's way more scary than in the United States right now. But
yeah, earlier today I had LIBOR pulled up, and it was crazy because like LIBOR and priced in euros is like negative 0.4, mm-hmm. and then Japan was negative. Great Britain I think was like barely positive. America was like 2.4-ish.
Yeah, Switzerland negative. You got Sweden, Denmark also is negative.
I've got the trading economics pulled up right now, and yeah, you can see Japan, Germany, France, Brazil is actually at 7.21, Belgium 0.11, Russia is at 7. And so here's the crazy part is, you know, we want to, you know, rag on Russia all day. Well, Russia can right now afford to pay 7%, whereas America, we had to lower it back down to lower cut rates today because everything is a house of cards. And as the Republicans, the so-called, you know, conservatives have exploded the debt, I mean, we're going to probably be at about $1.2 trillion this year, or depends if you count a fiscal year or calendar year. But, you know, certainly over $1 trillion this year. Obama's last year was $666 billion. I mean, I can't remember how I can remember that so easily. So, you know, we're at a point where by the time Trump gets out of here, we're going to double the deficit. And so, yeah, the GDP is a tiny bit incrementally higher than it was before. And if you actually compare it to the last 4 years of Obama, it's really not that too much of a difference. The job gains are really not too much different than Obama. And so I think if you use the measuring stick of different economic indicators, such as the stock market, well, the average growth of the stock market, and I'm just pulling this off the top of my head, pretty much guarantee it was higher under Obama, the growth year over year, than it was for Trump. Yeah, you know, we've hit 100 new highs, but it's only because you hit a high, break it by a tiny bit, then you crash down, and then you crawl back up, and you break it again, and you crash down, and that keeps happening. But the bottom line is that we were very close to 27,000 on the Dow Jones average January 26th of 2018. And, you know, depending on how long Jerome Powell keeps talking, you know, we could hit that same number today, because, you know, it seems like the longer he keeps talking, the worse it's getting. But it did just sort of reverse itself a little bit. We're down just under 300. And Powell is saying, he's not saying that the Fed will only cut rates once, or basically they're making this up as they go along. They have no idea. And how?
Well, they can't tell us that they're going to cut a substantial amount of times as the economy is going to the shitter, because that will create a massive panic worldwide, of course. So they got to keep, you know, everybody calm until actually the shit hits the proverbial fan here. I just pulled up a Reuters article, which is from, let's see here. This is from July 25th, 2019. And what this one is saying is global economic growth rate at risk of deepening despite rate cuts, says Reuters. And what you're seeing here is the increasing pessimism is clear from the latest Reuters poll taken 1st till 24th of July, which show the growth outlook for nearly 90% of over 45 economies polled was either downgraded or left unchanged. This applied not just to this year, but also for 2020. So you're seeing a slowdown in the economy on a global scale. And that is, of course, first, that's why you've seen the run up in everybody panicking and running to the US dollar, because there's nowhere else to go, really. Because all the other terrible fiat currencies are doing terrible as well. And of course, countries like Canada is in deep problems right now. You have Australia has a huge property bubble, several places as well. I think Canada will be next, to be honest with you, Tim. And I think it's not too long until actually Pilates here in Canada will make his decision. They made it in change now. They were talking about raising rates a lot more here in Canada. I believe we are 1.75%, so we're even 75 basis points underneath the United States. And Pulse was talking about, he was talking about raising interest rates at the start of this year. But now he says uncertainty leaves them, you know, to keep them unchanged. And what we're probably going to see now after the Fed cut, well, now this Central Bank of Canada will cut, and there's going to be a lot more. We had recently South Korea's central bank, Russia's central bank, and I forgot there was a couple other central banks that actually cut their interest rates in anticipation of the rate cut of the Federal Reserve. So, but what you're seeing here is the global slowdown in both debt and like the inflation and debt is decreasing, which tells us that we are in the deflationary we have some heavy deflationary pressure on the economy. And of course, with the Fed, you know, that have been getting rid of a whole bunch of bad investments on their balance sheets. If you take a look at their balance sheet, you know, that's been decreasing. And now the current balance sheet is right at, let's see, and I'll, Tim, just give me 1 second. It's dropped down from, you know, 4.47 trillion all the way down to 3.77 trillion, but that's only 500 billion. And it's not much compared to the actual.
And they just announced today, I'm not sure if you heard this, but they're stopping the quantitative tightening program now.
Stopped it.
Yeah. So they just stopped it, which if you go back to, you know, 6 months ago, they were still out there saying that they were going to lower it back down to zero, that they were going to sell off all the assets of the balance sheet. And I had a May 2017 had a video called, it was only 8 minutes long, called The Perfect Storm, where the entire thing was saying, okay, how the hell are we going to sell assets off our balance sheet? Who are we going to sell them to? The biggest buyer traditionally of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet has been the Federal Reserve. That's how they got the balance sheet to begin with. So now if the biggest buyer is now going to be the biggest seller, and who do they expect to make up the difference? Oh, China. Wait, last time I checked, we were in a trade war with China. And this was May of 2017, before the trade war even like ramped up. I was just, you know, basically seeing this happen, you know, 10 steps ahead of time. And so it's like, okay, you know, it's the two biggest. So the two biggest people buying our bonds, one is now going to be the biggest seller. The other one we're basically giving a big FU to, and then, you know, expecting them to go buy our bonds. I knew there's no way that that could happen. And so what you saw in October is the rates started going up quite a bit. I think, you know, the 10-year was well over 3%. Now we're like almost at underneath 2%. And of course, someone's calling me in right now. So this is the beauty of live production. So I've got that silence. And, it's just sort of really, you know, crazy, you know, where things are going and how no one else realized that this couldn't be done. And so you and I realized that this couldn't be done right from the beginning. And quick shameless plug, but you probably, a lot of speakers at an upcoming conference, you know, speaking of Canada, where a lot of those speakers are probably talking about many of these issues. So
yeah.
Do you want to maybe get into a little bit about the upcoming Winnipeg crypto conference you have coming up?
Yeah, no, 100%. I'm very excited.
And it's more than just crypto too, right? It's, you got different alternative monetary,
yeah,
system.
Alternative money, because it's all about money economics. Like, what are we going to replace this decrepit old system with, which is the current fractional reserve or reserve policy banking system that we have in the world today? Because it constantly needs to get fed new and new debt, and if you don't get that more debt into the system, it's going to collapse in on itself. And that's what you see with it's basically a Ponzi scheme where there's no more, you know, useful idiots at the bottom.
You weren't even trying to be punny there with the Fed new debt. So I you said Fed new debt. So the Federal Reserve buying debt. So you weren't even trying to say that, but
no, it's funny. Yeah, no, but that's what it is. It's a huge Ponzi scheme. Let's call it out for what it is, because there's no way out of this other than constantly getting into more debt. And if they can't, now you've seen, as I was going through just today's numbers that came out, economic indicators on a worldwide scale, they're all showing that we're in a severe, what's starting to be a slowdown here. And there's no way out of this. Well, how are they going to do it? Well, they're going to try to cut interest rates probably to zero. And then how are they going to do it after that when you still are getting a slowdown in the economy because people are so much debt? Think about it today, Tim. People are struggling at 1.75% interest rate. Well, you're looking at probably two, like with the actual 5-year, I saw in a credit union here was providing $2.99 on a 5-year here in Canada mortgage. People are struggling at that with 2.9. That's insane. So what we're trying to do in Winnipeg is bringing a lot of the top experts on the global macroeconomic scale, and also people that are going to be talking about the new systems that we could start to implement to get rid of this whole old corrupt system that is falling apart right now. And if you still believe in it, you're going to go down with the system, unfortunately. And that's what we're trying to educate people upon, especially with the new cryptocurrencies that are out, you know, Bitcoin and others, that we don't need the banks anymore with that system, which is fantastic. So we're trying to educate people about those type of systems that are out there. We might have some other speakers that will get announced in the coming weeks now on a little bit of other topics within, you know, talking about economy, because it's kind of a fluid thing, because now with the economy turning down, they might be very smart to actually talk about the economy itself and solutions and all this, you know, tie perfectly into the whole conference. So I think the conference with you know, what's going to happen now, who knows, right, Tim? But I think it's going to be a fantastic conference, and people are going to be very excited to know about other solutions than the current banking system, because they're going to be, again, you know, duped by this system, which has been propped up for over 10 years now, the longest expansion in history. We are going to see a lot of, you know, problems. And of course, it's not just about, you know, the cryptocurrency that we have in with our conference, but it's also with new technology that's going to make governments obsolete. It's going to help businesses be way, way more efficient about tracking inventory, tracking everything. So they are, you know, making a lot more money more efficiently without the, you know, the desperate need of being within a monetary system of the fractional reserve system, but just have a more efficient future and help each other create that and build that. And that's what we're doing, because we're going to have so many experts on the field of actually how a business can implement blockchain to really become more efficient, and how nations could, you know, start implementing blockchains to remove politics.
You guys have like Anthony Blanchard, I think, is speaking with. He's got the Hercules chain. He also has a gold back crypto. You've got David Morgan, I think, is going to be there. Raj from Dash Brazil is going to be there. Myself just signed on, so I'll be there. And I know you got a bunch of other really good speakers there as well. And, you know, it's just, you know, don't say, you know, you guys weren't warned or there weren't, you know, things that you could do, especially if you're in Canada and you're, you know, obviously probably a lot of your original core audience was probably from Winnipeg, because initially WAM was a Winnipeg alternative media and then turned into World Alternative Media. So I believe Josh is going to be there. I know you'll be there. I'll be there. A lot of other good speakers will be there. And so, you know, it's a time for you guys to interact with us, be able to, you know, throw us different ideas, different scenarios, you know.
Network and find like-minded people, because that's what all these conferences are all about, is not only talk about the problems, but also talk about solutions, but then also create the network around those solutions. So we're all, you know, working on this together. And of course, we are individualists here. Me, Tim, everybody, almost everybody that's speaking. So the problem is that, you know, we as individualists, we don't really necessarily cooperate a lot, but we do need to cooperate to get around these systems and create our own infrastructures without the need of this decrepit old system that we had for, you know, hundreds of years now, that hasn't worked any times that they tried it, but they keep on, because they're like mentally insane, because what Einstein said, if you continue to use the same solutions to fix a problem, you know, that's the definition of insanity, instead of trying to think outside of the box, which we are now, which you're creating all these solutions. So yeah, just look forward to so many great speakers at the Winnipeg Crypto Conference. And it's going to be a lot of solutions for the everyday person and for the business people out there that are looking for solutions to, you know, thrive through the next phase of this turmoil that's coming into the economy, but then be able to thrive on the other side of it by, you know, being on the forefront of technology, being, you know, ahead of the curve of everybody else, so they are not stuck in the financial rut when that comes to them. So it's just about positioning yourself, because any big monetary event throughout history has created, you know, a lot of despair, a lot of terrible things happening, but it also created mass amounts of opportunity. And that's what we want to, you know, be able to take on and be able to thrive at the other side, because we're not going to be in a monetary rut forever, and we're going to have a totally new infrastructure and system on the other side, most likely. But it's going to suck when it happens, but we are going to be prepared, and we're going to try to make it suck the least possible, and then find all the different solutions that we could bring forward to the other side, and then help elevate humanity to a way better place that we are currently.
Yeah, least suck possible, I think, is a good way of putting it, because a lot of people are like, well, what's the best way to, you know, prevent yourself out of this crash or to make a lot of money from the crash? And in the initial stages, it's just trying to be, you know, the least worst off, or basically be able to take the least amount of, you know, arrows to your personal financial situation, and just being in a position where you are able to conserve your purchasing power going forward. And there's more than one way to, you know, skin a cat, more than one way to do this, but you have to have a plan ahead of time. And a lot of people, you know, who never had anything to begin with, will just use, you know, whatever crash that happens as an excuse. I mean, you got people who are still using 2008 as an excuse of why they can't, you know, do certain things, and younger people too, like our age, you know, like, oh, I can't do this because of 2008. I'm like, oh yeah, I started my career of the day Lehman Brothers crash. You don't think I had every excuse in the book not to do what I'm doing? Because certainly everyone who I came on board with, they all left after a month or two, and they used to, oh, well, you know, it's a crash, and what can we do? And, but, you know, if you want something bad enough, you got to work for it. And then can you also maybe speak to, like, the silver-gold ratio? Isn't that, like, basically pretty much at all-time highs right now?
Oh, yeah, you know what? Let's pull that up, actually, right now, Tim. Just give me one second here. But, yeah, just speak a little bit about the gold-silver ratio, and then...
Yeah, I think it was, like, close to, like, 93 at one point. I'm not sure what it's at today.
Yeah, but now it's fallen. It's fallen down. And if we go and look at, I think it's macro trends that post a perfect. Yeah.
Boom. So beat you to it. Yeah, got it.
If you can pull it up for everybody here so we can see it. But this is interesting here. So let's just one second. Let me have
92.23. Okay. So it might not be, you know, I think it only goes to June. So I think it's one month behind.
But if you just do the gold, and if you divide the gold by silver right now, if you can just do that quickly, Tim, we'll come up with the actual number, because just recently, before this whole thing with the Fed and everything that happened, we saw actually gold and silver do a major run-up compared to what they've done for the last couple of years. They actually broke through a resistance level of 1,350 that was for gold, of course. And silver has been on a huge uprun the last week. It's almost up 10%, I believe, from its low, and they're doing really well. They're trying to predict something, and of course the bankers and everybody tries to come in and manipulate. But in other countries, again, you know, let's talk about everybody else, but the United States here, everybody else almost have record highs in their currency price for gold. And that should be telling that they've been printing so much money, and that we're in a huge, we're in for a huge problem here, that you have gold and silver constantly going up in value, which is good, because that means that they're keeping their purchasing power, their wealth insurance, because they don't really do anything. They're just there to keep its value throughout time. As the currency loses value, it will keep on just increasing in price as the currency goes down. So they're doing exactly what they're set to do around the world right now, and they're preserving wealth for people, because it's very important to talk about gold and silver. Now, of course, we talked about Anthem Gold, there's Lode and other gold and silver backed currencies that are trying to, you know, combine the two great things here, which is the blockchain and the precious metals that have, you know, worked throughout history.
And we're sitting in at 87 right now, so we've got 1421 on gold, 1630 on silver, which is actually so silver right now is down 1.5% today. Gold's almost down 1%, which is sort of crazy, because it seems like gold and silver traders want to have it both ways all the time. I'm not talking about gold bugs here, but
they're trading paper though, fake paper anyways.
But when the interest rates goes up, what they're trying to say is, oh, well, now there's less of a need for gold, because now you're getting a higher coupon interest payment from your money. Yeah. And so the price of gold should go down. And now here we have the price, now we have the interest rates going down and the price of gold going down, which to me, you know, interest rates going up, you know, they're damned if they do, damned if they don't. But if interest rates are going up, then to me, it sounds like, well, then now there's less of a chance of the government being able to repay its bonds. And so to me, it actually makes the case for gold get even stronger. Mm-hmm. And then when the rates are going down, it's encouraging people to take on more debt, which also makes any incremental rise that much harder for the government to pay back its debt. So for me, I don't even care. I mean, it's way past the point of being able to fix this, way past the point of being able, which I read yesterday, I think like Pete Buttigieg or one of the Democratic candidates was like, you know, you've got to elect me, but because 2021 is the last chance, because that's like when they would actually get into office. That's the last chance we have to save this country and to stop global warming and to bring back the economy. Well, guess what? You know, maybe Ron Paul in 2012 was probably the last, that ship has sailed a long time ago. And right now, I mean, and this is where guys like, you know, Alex Jones, I heard him the other day because he was top linked on Drudge, where he was, you know, basically saying, you know, well, Trump knows that there's no way that this economy can ever, that we can never get off these 0% rates. So he just has to, you know, flood us with as much debt as possible, but to actually do good things for the economy. And it just takes the ball off what the real issue is. And the real issue is, and you hit the nail on the head, is you shouldn't be trying to, you know, fix the system. You should be trying to replace the system. So we don't need to fix the Federal Reserve. We need to replace the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, it's broken.
We don't need to replace it with anything as the better way. It's just the mindset of what can and can't be done. But we are coming up on probably a little over an hour that we've been yakking it. So I'm not sure how much of the listeners, you know, especially if we're going to be going up against Josh. Let's give Josh a plug for his Mauritania. I don't know how to pronounce it. The Reshot Structure.
Reshot Structure, yeah.
And so, you know, guys, definitely checked it out. I got about 40 minutes of it and then had the kids running around, had to put them to bed and do all that business. But we'll be watching a little bit more of it today. And as I'm watching this, I'm like, oh, man, you keep getting like deeper into these zones. And as he's getting deeper into it, it keeps getting a little bit more sketchy, a little bit more sketchy. And so I'm at the point now where I don't think he's fully got there, but he's close to getting there. And I already know he's alive and he's going to make it. So it's sort of somewhat, you know, dampens, you know, what's going on. So it's sort of like watching like one of the hunting killer documentaries.
But anyway, let me just finish here at the end, because when you saw the big drop down in the gold silver ratio, about 4-1, like 4 numbers down, that might be telling us that we're in for a crisis, because anytime when the gold silver ratio really start to drop down fast, throughout the last, if you go and look at all the different recessions that is marked here on macro trends, you'll see that most of the times they actually, when they go in a downward scale where silver is gaining value versus gold, hey, there's something happening. There's actually the economy is crashing. So yeah, so I think we're in for something. I think the gold silver ratio is definitely trying to tell us something there, Tim. And but again, you know, we got troubles in Indonesia, we got troubles in Singapore, all around the world. And if you look at another interesting thing, Tim, if you go to trading economics before we quit this, because there's so much data that you and me go through in all our videos, because I feel it's important to give people the raw numbers, the raw facts, so they can make up their own decisions. But if you go and take a look at most African stock exchanges, which is most of them are, you know, heavily laden with resource companies, and go to trading economics, go all the way to the bottom there and show people, you could see that most of them year over year is in severe. Actually, is it 20% that is telling them we're actually, what do you call it?
A recession.
Yeah, in a recession. So
bear market.
Yeah, bear market. So there's Kenya, you know, the big some of the biggest economies like Kenya and Nigeria is already in a recession. And then there's several other ones to follow, like Senegal's and others. But what is most important here is that it's showing the need for commodities is dropping. And of course, that correlates with the numbers that I showed, the economic indicators and so on that are in a negative trend downward. So I think we're in for something here. I think this is, you know, the first of a lot of interest rates cut to come from the Fed as we're starting to panic more and more. And then, of course, Deutsche Bank is, I think Deutsche Bank in Europe might be in the center of everything here. And we're in for a huge, you know, surprise for the economy. I wouldn't tell it that, because people like us and others have been talking for almost 3 years about Deutsche Bank. But I think we're going to be in a serious surprise for the global economy when one of the major banks in the world, number three on the FSB, as you know, Powell said, one of my colleagues, he sits on the FSB, which is the Financial Stability Board, by the way, which actually does all the policies for all the world. They put out policies, and then the G20 countries are implementing them. So that's what you're seeing here is a big kind of push to try to keep confidence, you know, because it's always a confidence and a trust game. And remember, every single fiat currency throughout history, and this is no change, most of them lost their value over a year. It took after the people lost trust in the currency, it was all gone. So, and that's the same with the Venezuelan bolivar and the Zimbabwean dollar that, you know, recently fell, Tim. So I think we're in for some serious surprises there. Of course, guys like Martin Armstrong and some others believe that the United States dollar will prevail and that it's going to be strong for another 2-3 years until we really get a big crash. But I like, this is ridiculous, like how much it's pushed already, because in 2008 you had the U.S. stock market going up to record highs because everybody was piling in. It was kind of the same scenario as we have now, but with a lot less debt. Now we got over 3 times more debt currently that they had to use in order to prop the system up, Tim. So I think we're in for some serious turmoil coming up here in the coming year or two, for sure, maybe a lot earlier, but we'll see how everything comes out there. And just one last thing, if you look at where we were talking about the balance sheet that you bought that. Well, actually, you've seen there's a whole bunch of M0 that has been burnt now. And I think they were bought and then just got released into the ether, kind of so on. Because if you take a look at M0, it's actually dropped severely over since 2016. It's actually dropped down almost $1 trillion, which is most of the base currency plus some other easily liquid assets. As they call them, that's what measures M0. So I'm kind of wondering here, Tim, that, they've been burning cash, but when you also burn M0, in a fractional reserve banking world, you can't borrow more money either. So they're kind of in a predicament here where they really cornered themselves and they're just out of options and they're failing miserably.
Yeah, one of the things I'm also taking a look at here on the trading economics, especially some of these African stocks, it actually shows the Zimbabwe stock market is up 64.55%. So you might be thinking, oh man, like Zimbabwe is a great place to invest. But then if you take a look at what their inflation is, it's basically double that. So even so,
yeah, you know, so you actually didn't do that well.
Yeah, so naturally I do have that. I'm trying to have it pulled up. Yeah. So here we go. So the Zimbabwe inflation rate was 175.66%, but the Zimbabwe stock market is only up 64.55. I couldn't find, I don't know what the abbreviation for the Venezuela stock market is. I'm trying to see if I can find the South American ones over here. But yeah, anyways, it's just stupid crazy where their stock market, I know their inflation rate is, actually, let me go find it over here. It's something stupid, like 20, here we go. It is 282,972% is the Venezuela inflation rate over here. And maybe, you know, I haven't really screwed around on Venezuela or on trading economics too much, as much as I should have. But yeah, so here we go. Let's inflation rate. I don't know if it'll have the stock market. Here, stock market is it only has a daily rate for that. Let me click on this. See what...
Yeah, but if you take a look at, for example, just over this year, Tim, the actual Zimbabwe dollar to gold ratio, you're looking at around 428,000. It was just in August last year, and then at this year, it's hovering about 511. So it's already up 100,000. That's about 20% that is gold has hedged itself against inflation as well. So you're seeing there that like all of this is like, even though that you see the stock market is going up drastically, you might see that in the United States too, that who knows, maybe 50,000, maybe 100,000 down. But at that time, we have some serious problems in the real economy with inflation and everything. So it doesn't matter if the stock market went up that much. And again, you know, when the stock market goes up, Tim, it tells us that the real inflation is probably a lot higher than what they're telling us as well. Because how does all that money get into the stock market without the inflation going up? That doesn't make sense when anything. And I did this actually in Canada, where I looked at housing. because the real numbers didn't make sense to me. And of course, like M3, for example, which is all debt and old currency in circulation, that was up 10% on an average. Meanwhile, the official inflation is 1.8% a year. So you tell me that there's nothing wrong there. So what I looked at is like, how did they get their numbers? And of course, like the weightedness of how much they weigh real estate costs into the actual CPI, well, it was 26.8%. Meanwhile, the actual cost for the average Canadian, if you take calculate for 50% of the population, that was 75.5%, Tim. And 75.5% versus, you know, 26.8 or whatever it was. That's a huge flaw there in calculating inflation. So, of course, if you actually calculated the inflation in properly, you'd be laying at, you know, probably 5 to 6-7% in Canada. And the same in the United States. If you calculate it, you know, you got John Williams of Shadow Stats doing this perfectly, you know, using 1980 numbers. We're looking at, you know, about the same. So inflation is a lot higher than all these manipulated numbers that these economists, these academics is just blabbing about in media right now. And we're in for some serious problems here that they are not going to be able to fix. No idiots that ever created a fiat currency system on this scale has ever been able to fix. And even though we have all the computers in the world and everything, it's going to fail. Let's just leave it at that. And that's where I think we're going to end this, Tim. We're looking at the end game here, and it's going to be quite entertaining and a little bit scary at the same time, I think.
Yeah, and the longer that this is able to go on, I mean, the worse it's going to, the end game is eventually going to be for people who've had their head in the sand and who think that we've made it out of this. And everything that you basically have explained is sort of, you know, can be sort of summed up as if you're playing a Monopoly game and you start off with $1,500 or whatever, you start off with $1,000, and then all of a sudden you give everybody an extra $3,000. Well, now you can afford to then pay maybe, you know, an extra, you know, $700 for Park Place. And it doesn't mean that there was actual extra wealth created. It's just that you just gave everybody more money. And, you know, the Democrats are like, well, we just turned, you know, every other spot on the board to, you know, pay, you know, $100 to, you know, community chest or tax. And that's gonna be the way out of it. When the fact that the money is based off debt means there's no way out of this situation. We're only basically, you know, biding time over here while pretending things can work. If you guys are checking out the live stream, I do apologize that I think there is an echo going on. So I'll have to figure that out for next time. But for now, Tim Pichot and John Snyson with World Alternative Media, where find the truth, be the change. And 99% of the time, I usually mess it up and I say it the other way around and I've got to redo it. So I'm glad that time I managed to not do that. But let me just see if you want to hold on for like a second. I can try to, I was trying to screw around with this while you